Now, Washington says a group of seven industrialized nations has pledged to end the decade-long war in Syria. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said G7 members reaffirmed their commitment to a political solution to the conflict, adding that the group will reauthorize a U.N. cross-border aid mechanism, which allows for delivery of aid to Syrians without the permission of the central government. Blinken said the G7 will continue working to advance all aspects of a Security Council resolution which calls for a ceasefire and political settlement to the conflict in Syria. U.S. is widely accused of sovereignty with its military presence. Washington has refused to withdraw its forces from the war-torn country and has openly backed anti-Damascus militants. And now joining us for the program is Tony Gosling, investigative journalist, joining us from Bristol, and Edward Corgan, international lawyer and commentator, joining us out of Ontario. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess we'll start there with you, Tony. Hope you're safe and doing well out there. Your thoughts on these kind of these mixed messages. You hear, voices out of Washington, especially Secretary of State Antony Blinken, saying we want to put an end to this thing, but then actions on the ground and the fact that they're still present in the country and choking it off with the Caesar Act is not really doing anything for the future of Syria, is it?
Well, I think the big, actually, the hypocrisy of this is that the G7 haven't really announced that the G7 are pledging to end the Syrian war. What's happened is the Russians have ended the Syria war by backing the elected government of President Assad in what was, a proxy war, which NATO were paying for all these mercenaries to destroy the country, very much like they successfully did over in Libya. This is really the hypocrisy that you see at these sorts of G7 meetings, is that they are having to face this reality, but they're trying to pretend that it's something that they wanted. It's the last thing in the world they want. To Damascus, which was the road they wanted the mercenaries to walk and to fire their way along. They wanted to take Damascus. They failed to do that. And this is them having to finally admit, but trying to dress it up with some PR spin to make out that it's a good thing. The Russians have done this. And the reason for that is because if NATO and the Western countries had succeeded in Syria in undermining and overturning the government through their proxy armies and their mercenaries, the Islamists that they've been funding ever since Operation Cyclone in Afghanistan in the 1980s, which the CIA all funded, then the Russians would have lost their base in Syria, in the Mediterranean, been forced to back into the Black Sea by the Western powers, and the Russians realised that that could be decisive in any future conflict. So that's what's really happened here. And also, we have to ask, what is the G7? Well, the countries that make it up, because it was the G8 until Russia was thrown out, really, for just having its own opinion, having the cheek to do that. It's the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, France, Germany, Italy and Japan. Those are the seven countries. And really what you're looking at here is a kind of invite-only world government, a little bit like the World Economic Forum, self-appointed powerful people, very close to the international financial architecture, international settlements in Switzerland and the International Monetary Fund. And if countries want favours from these big financial institutions set up by the Bretton Woods Agreement at the end of the Second World War, they have to kowtow to the wishes of the G7 leadership. So I think that's really what we're seeing here, is a public relations, an attempt to salvage a disaster, which is their complete failure in Syria and blocking of taking over that country by the Russians, and try and turn it into a bit of something positive for their PR. But of course, they're not forgetting the Russians. We've had the statement against China and Russia from the G7, both saying both are, terrible countries. You know, we are preparing to struggle with different ways, and I think that is a sign really that the world is starting to divide down these. It's always been pretty divided, but we're seeing more and more independent nations forced into these massive power blocks, which is very dangerous for the future. And the G7 is a competitor to the United Nations in many ways. The UN is much more egalitarian. It's not perfect, but the G7 is simply a rich man's club, an invite-only attempt at world government.
Thank you there, Tony. And Edward, I'd like to welcome you to the program. Your initial thoughts on this?
Well, I pretty much agree with the other commentator. The whole area, it's not a civil war. It was more or less an invasion through proxies and, you know, funded by the Saudis, United Arab Emirates, Qatar for a period of time. And, of course, the Americans, the British, the French, and the Israelis all were paying for these soldiers. And it was, you know, there was no civil war in Syria. It really is a foreign invasion. But the Western powers who tried to effect regime change in Syria, like they did in Libya, like they did in Iraq, like they did in Afghanistan, failed because the Russians did put their foot down and were going to support their base at Tartarus on the Mediterranean. But it's very dangerous. The West was saying, oh, we're fighting Islamic extremists, except the Islamic extremists were, in fact, funded, trained, and supported by the West. The Americans did more bombing of Syrian troops than they ever did of Daesh. And when the Daesh was stealing, you know, convoys full of oil from Syria and sending them into Turkey, the Americans were ordered the pilots were ordered not to attack that. It wasn't until the Russians started attacking the convoys that was shut down. But we look at what the Americans and their allies were saying, but what they were doing. They were, you know, funding and training these Islamic extremists, and they're trying to prevent the Islamic extremists from taking over. But it was all an attempt to destroy the Syrian national government that was inclusive and was quite stable, actually.
And Edward, I'm glad you alluded to that, because the G7, they're saying that we are committed to a political resolution of the conflict in Syria, and we're committed to ending the Syrian conflict. And so my question back to you, with everything you just said, how does that make sense? There's no respect for the government in Damascus. All the G7, along with a few of their allies, are still trying to topple the government there in Damascus. So where's the political resolution that they're seeking?
Well, it's a face-saving measure, and it's also still trying to affect regime change. You know, they talk about Syria being, a dictatorship, but the fact is that there's an election went on. Assad won over 70% of the vote, and there is, you know, not a perfect democracy, but a democracy in Syria that certainly is a lot better than the one in Israel or Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, which are, of course, supported by the same, you know, gang of seven, if you want to call them that. But they're still hoping, you know, they're saying that we can send aid into areas that are outside of the control of the central government. And, you know, probably close to 90% of Syria is under control of the Damascus government, which is internationally recognized as a legitimate government, except by people who don't like it. And, you know, they're still trying to maybe break up Syria, which I think was the original plan, and, of course, destroy the country. They have destroyed much of the country. But the opposition to the Damascus regime has been crushed. They have lost the war, but there's still American troops illegally in Syria. They're still looting oil. They're still stealing grain and wheat and other products. And they're supporting, you know, the Islam terrorists in Syria. And, of course, they killed General Soleimani, who is the most effective fighter against the Islamic terrorists. And again, if you look at what they were doing, it was the CIA that was supporting the Islamic terrorists. The Pentagon were a Kurdish faction, and I have some sympathy for the Kurds. You know, there's a problem there that's crying for a solution. But, you know, continue this war, continuing illegally occupying the country and trying to destabilize and destroy Syria is not an option. But it also is a recognition that, you know, they have failed. to overthrow the government and effect regime change. Okay. But they're still clinging on to the, you know, the attempt to maybe partition the state and still cause trouble and to try to, you know, extort, you know, conditions and other concessions from Syria, which is not going to happen, in my opinion.
Thank you, Edward. And Tony, your final thoughts on this?
Well, if you ingratiate yourself as a nation to the big power brokers in the US, then you might get an invite to a G7 meeting. We see this time Australia, India, and South Africa. I mean, India, for goodness sake, of course they should be at this kind of meeting, but it's supposed to be a big favour to India to allow them to attend to Modi and the South Africans. So that's basically the way they operate. What we need, of course, is a much stronger UN with, unfortunately, the Dag Hammarskjöld, who was a very powerful and actually did his job as UN Secretary General, firefighting around the world, sorting these problems out, was assassinated by the white supremacists in Saimaa in South Africa, or from South Africa. He was assassinated there. And this has actually really chilled the over the decades. And so we need a much stronger UN, because what's happening now is that power vacuum is being filled by people like the G7, and most importantly by these private think tanks like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, whose budget is much bigger in many ways than the Foreign Office or the State Department. These are private interests which are basically privatizing Western foreign policy for the interests of who? For the interests of those who make money from war and those that want to grab resources. And that's really what the G7 it represents. It's trying to polish the image of this selfish beast, which is really trying to dominate the world for a private profit. I think they really it really washes. The only thing that keeps the G7 credible is the treacherous mainstream press in the West that doesn't seem to dare to really criticize it.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program. Tony Gosling, investigative journalist there, joining us out of Bristol, and Edward Corgi, international lawyer and commentator, joining us from Ontario. And viewers, that's a wrap for the segment of your Press TV's News Review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.